guys. Welcome back to the Thrilogy podcast. My name's Morgan, and I'm here with one of my co-hosts,
Cameron.
It feels so strange to have Krista out, but in case you missed it last week, she's on maternity leave for the foreseeable future. I did want to mention that she is still working behind the scenes and has totally taken over our social medias, which is huge.
Which might mean that we actually have active social medias again, which is also really great. So if you do follow us on social media and you've been, what's the word? I don't want to say disappointed, but you feel like there's been lacking, content lacking, it should hopefully get better because we now have somebody who's dedicating themselves fully to that. So thank you, Krista.
That's right. Yeah, in case you didn't know, Cameron used to run our Twitter account and I ran the Instagram. So Krista is taking both of those off our plates, which, like Cameron said, is a major help and we'll actually have some content for you guys. But even so, of course, she's still a major part of the podcast, even though she's not recording with us. And in more Thrilogy news, this episode will be a little different. And I feel like we've been saying that a lot recently. But
this
we're
time it's going to be spooky.
That's right. We're approaching our first holiday season on the Thrilogy podcast, and we wanted to do something special. So in this case, it's Halloween, but for each upcoming holiday, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas would be next, we're going to be releasing a dedicated episode with our cases or topics or whatever directly related to those holidays. So all that said, surprise, this is the Halloween episode, and I'm excited to get into it.
You also might see this episode on a Sunday. You might also see it on a Monday. We'll see how editing goes, having it come out a day early. But if you do see this episode on a Sunday, you officially know why. So happy Halloween. Morgan will get into the cases for today, but I hope everybody has a really excellent and safe Halloween.
Yes, safe, but also fun Halloween. Like our last episode, this will also be a more casual discussion-based episode. So please give us some feedback on whether or not you like this style. I think we've mentioned before, this style is really fun for us, but if you don't like it, we'd honestly rather give you guys something you truly love since the other style is fun for us too. So please let us know what you think. So without further ado, let's get into the Halloween episode.
Spooky.
So before I get into the cases, I just wanted to start off by chatting a bit about Halloween in general. I feel like, Cameron, you have a somewhat unique perspective, at least, you know, from me and Krista, because you live in Europe. And I feel like in Europe, Halloween isn't celebrated like it is in the US. Like, yeah, I know for me, like, exactly. Like, when I studied abroad, like, what? I don't know, 5 years ago. That's crazy. 6 years ago. Stop. Okay. I'm done. That's crazy. When I studied abroad 6 years ago, which is crazy, I was in London, and I feel like people acknowledged that it was Halloween and they like drank to celebrate or whatever. It was just kind of an excuse to drink, but they definitely didn't dress up. Like, if you dressed up, that was strange, and there were like barely any decorations at all. So is that the same in Spain, or like what have you observed with that?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. I mean, it's very much an American holiday, and that's kind of the general theme. Like, even when you go like Halloween costume shopping, a lot of it is very American Halloween inspired. So speaking of which, my costume, Jason from Friday the 13th, head over to our Instagram if you want to catch that picture out. That's a perfect example of it. Like, if you go to a lot of these costume stores, the very few that they are, and actually I bought mine online, it was from a dedicated costume store, but it's not like you can find them very easily. So I don't think it was necessarily the exact same as your experience in London. Like, people do somewhat dress up, but it definitely isn't this big, like this big ordeal like you would normally see in the US. So I don't know, give or take. Like, for example, this Sunday too, just kind of as an example, this Sunday we're going to be going to like a Halloween party, and it's Halloween themed, but that isn't like, I don't know, there are some places that do it, some places that don't, so it's kind of in between, but it really isn't as big of a deal as it is in the US, at least from my experience anyway.
And do you know if people trick or treat? Because I know, like, when I talked to people in London, they were like, no one does that. But
yeah, I don't think people do here either, like kids obviously. I've never seen it. I mean, maybe like it might be becoming more of a thing. I don't have a kid, so I don't really know what to tell you. And like, yeah, so yeah, but no, I mean, like, even in the US, even if you're not actively participating in like your neighborhood's trick-or-treating, you still see kids dress up and you see kids walking around and stuff. And I don't feel like I've ever seen that here. So maybe in some places, but by and large, no.
So anyway, I truly love the fall season and I like Halloween, but I've never been one to plan my costume or like get super into Halloween. Like, now that I have a house, I like to decorate a bit and I like the season in theory. But like I said, I've never been one to go all out on a costume or whatever.
To be fair, I don't think neither you nor I are ones to plan anything. much less a Halloween costume. Because let me tell you what, I needed a costume for Tuesday. So as of recording yesterday, and it got here on Tuesday morning. So yeah, not great at planning.
Yeah, and like, I like Halloween and I like dressing up, but I never have a costume. And like, if I go to a Halloween party, I'm always throwing something together at the last minute. And then I'm like, oh, my costume is terrible.
Yeah, 100%. No, I actually was saying that earlier this week, that we definitely have to plan more in advance in the future, because I would like to have a cool costume. Like, I would like to have something that stands out, you know, but like, you really do have to kind of plan it. It isn't something you can just whip together at the last minute. Realistically speaking, you really have to, like, you need like a month at least, if not more. So like, props to people who go all out with amazing costumes, because it is not an easy task.
No, definitely not. And like, I remember, I haven't been to a Halloween party in a while, but I remember like throwing together costumes, feeling self-conscious, like, oh, my costume's terrible. So when I lived in London, no one was in costume. So I was like, oh, a little bit of relief.
But
at the same time, I missed it. Like, I missed the Halloween spirit. So I don't know. I feel like when people ask me if I like Halloween, I say yes, but I have like the tiniest bit of imposter syndrome since I don't get into it.
I agree.
Anyway, just shifting gears a little bit as I prep us for our first case. Off the top of your head, can you think of any Halloween fears or paranoias that people have related to Halloween?
Well, I feel like everybody by and large is maybe a little bit more superstitious, right? And like, I don't know. Is it weird that the first thing that comes to mind is razor blades and candy?
Cameron, stop. You did not just say that. My case.
Why?
My case is about...
Is it about razor blades and candy?
Well, not exactly, but it's about cyanide in candy.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if I think about something that would, that, like, makes me paranoid, and it's actually kind of weird that when you really sit and think about it, you kind of think, like, as kids, we just trusted people to not literally poison us with candy. Mm-hmm. Like, don't take candy from strangers. We just ignore that rule for one day a year. And then the day after, we're like, yeah, not going to happen. Wow, that's crazy. But yeah, like, I can't think of anything that, like, I'm paranoid of, especially as an adult. I don't know, because I'm not sadly, I'm not going and knocking on people's doors asking for candy anymore. But yeah, I don't know. I think that would be the only, that's like the only thing that immediately comes to mind is like razor blades and candy.
Yeah. I mean, that's so funny that you said that, because like I said, that leads me perfectly into our first case. But I asked that because
you might even say that it's spooky.
But I asked initially because I know we've been talking a lot recently about paranoia and people getting scared by stories that in all actuality would never really happen to them. So like, for example, there's a fear that a stranger will pressure a child or someone to do drugs. And some people are really scared about that. But other people laugh because it's like, why would a drug dealer give away their product for free? And it's kind of like a joke. And like, so there's that general paranoia that people have. But I feel like the Halloween version, like you said, is the razor blades in candy, but also people putting drugs in candy, which is, again, like, why would people be giving away drugs? And like, why would anyone do that? So it seems like this paranoia that's unfounded. But I know for me, my parents always checked my candy before I ate it to make sure it wasn't tampered with or anything like that. And of course, they never found anything. So I feel like in general, it's probably true that this is just unfounded paranoia. And 99% of the time, you don't have to be worried that your child's candy has drugs in it. But our first story is about just that. So on the evening of Halloween night in 1974, it was a pretty cold, misty, and damp night in Houston, Texas. It had been raining all night, so everyone had their rain gear on as they went trick-or-treating. Unbeknownst to his friends who he was with, Ronald O'Brien, who was an adult man, had pixie sticks laced with cyanide shoved up the sleeves of his raincoat. Ronald was trick-or-treating with his son and his daughter and a few friends, just a group of people, and he gave the pixie sticks to five children, including two of his own, his son Timothy and his daughter Elizabeth. Timothy asked to eat his pixie stick first and commented that it was very bitter and it didn't taste right. An hour later, he was dead. Luckily, none of the other children ate their pixie sticks, but losing Timothy at only 8 years old is such an unspeakable tragedy, honestly, and was so disturbing to me. So if this case wasn't disturbing enough, before Ronald was found guilty of murdering his son, he's quoted by saying he was so shocked by this, and he even gave an emotional eulogy at Timothy's funeral. He even blamed a specific house for where they got the pixie sticks, which really tarnished that family's reputation for a while. The police had conducted a thorough investigation, luckily, and found that Ronald had just taken out a life insurance policy on his children. There was an adding machine in Ronald's office, which basically is like a calculator combined with a typewriter. So as you do calculations, it prints.
Well, the first sign is taking out a life insurance policy on an 8 year old. I mean, like, I mean, realistically speaking, anybody who's like not married, doesn't have any kids, I mean, there really is very little reason to have a life insurance policy, especially an 8 year old. Like, it's just wild.
Yep.
And it's even wild that you can do that, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I see the use for it, because think about it, like, if you had a child and they passed away, like, I definitely wouldn't be able to work. Like, there's no way I'd be able to get up and go to work. So I see that use. Or even, I don't know, if the child was sick, you could use that money to pay their bills. Whatever. I do see the use for it. But like you said, it's the first red flag is that those policies were taken out. And
especially for a healthy 8 year old, I guess, is the kind of twist there.
Yes. And not just one of his kids. He took it out on all of his kids. And even more strangely, and which is kind of what led them to finding Ronald as their main suspect, is that, as I said, they found this adding machine, and they had a print, which is called a tape, but it basically looks like a receipt. And they found that receipt, or the tape, which showed the exact same amount that he would have collected for their life insurance policies. So he was in his office doing the calculations on how much money he'd receive if both of his children passed away.
Okay. Yeah. At first, I was wondering where you were kind of going with it, because I was wondering, well, maybe he was just like writing in like monthly finances and like, you know, was writing like the amount of the life insurance policy. But yeah, if he was calculating out how much he would get, red flag, red flag, red flag. On a side note, completely unrelated, my grandma used to have one of those machines that she would use for her bills. And as a kid, loved them. So like, it didn't strike me as weird at first. But then you start to go into the fact that he was calculating out the exact amount. Okay, that's a little strange. And you're leaving a paper trail, dude. Come on.
Like a physical paper trail, not even
like actually a paper trail. Like, I'm not talking about like an electronic paper trail. I'm talking about like an actual trail of paper. It's on a roll. Like, you're literally leaving behind a
receipt. He could have thrown it away.
At the bare minimum, shredded it through. Like, if you have one of these machines, come on, you're going to tell me you don't have a shredder in your house? Let's get real.
Yeah. So, definitely a misstep on his part. And after that, it was like an open and shut case. It was really quick to get a conviction on him. In fact, it took the jury less than an hour to convict him and only an hour and 15 minutes to sentence him to death, which is super quick for a case.
Yeah. I feel really bad for the family that he tried to pin it on. Like, can you imagine? Mm-hmm. You're like just a normal family and somebody pins this just terrible crime that they're giving tainted candy away the kids. That's awful.
Mm-hmm. And such a crime that's like rooted in paranoia too. Like something that, again, like we were talking about this the last couple episodes, just like something that people could be like, oh, they could do that to me. Or like, it's like this mysterious thing that you're like, oh, that family is evil and what are they capable with? It's that like mystery factor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, like I said, this was an open and shut case, and the detective on his case said that Ronald was very cold and calculating and basically saw this murder as a means to get out of debt. But honestly, he wasn't very smart about it. If you're asking me, why would you leave all of these receipts and everything? I don't know.
Yeah. And again, like I said in the beginning, just going back to the fact, taking out a life insurance policy on an 8-year-old. I mean, and, you know, you hear about so many of these cases that where somebody does take out a life insurance policy, a lot of times on their spouse, right? And they either hire somebody to kill their spouse or they kill their spouse or whatever the case is to try to get out of debt. But it's like, do you not think that that's going to come? Like, what's your plan here? I mean, you know that somebody that close to you, their death is probably going to be investigated, especially if it's a kid and especially if it's somebody, you know, giving them tainted Halloween candy. You don't think that they're going to look into you too and see that you have debts and, oh, wow, imagine that. That life insurance policy would just so happen to pay off that debt. Like, it's just, it's so many of these, like, I think the thing about those types of crimes where people do take out life insurance policies with the idea to pay off debt or to get out of trouble or whatever, they bother me almost more because you're going to get caught. You're leaving behind this paper trail no matter what way you look at it. And you're taking somebody's life away to pay off debt that you're actually never going to pay anyway because you're going to prison. So, like,
exactly. And like I said, and like what you were saying, he's leaving this paper trail. So you're obviously going to get caught, especially when life insurance is involved. Like, you don't think that for a murder, a clear murder, that the life insurance company that has millions and millions of dollars isn't going to conduct an investigation?
insurance companies will literally conduct an investigation if you try to get a scratch on your car fixed. They don't even want to pay out the $400 or $500 to fix that. You really think they're going to pay out millions of dollars and just be like, oh yeah, sounds legit. Works for me. Like, no way in hell.
Yep, exactly. But I'm glad that he wasn't smart about it because he got caught and justice was served.
Which, thank God, because we do a lot of unsolved cases. So whenever there's a solved one, it's really nice to hear.
Yep. And again, you're leading me directly into my next case because unfortunately, our next case is an unsolved mystery.
Again, it's spooky season. Read in your mind.
That's right. But I did just want to mention before I move on to the next case that I don't know, maybe this case about the Halloween candy, again, it happened in 1974. People obviously have not forgotten about this. And maybe this case, or at least cases like this, are why people are so paranoid about Halloween candy.
No, I mean, I think you're right. And obviously there have been other cases, you know, where people have found things in their kids' Halloween candy and so on and so forth. So it's not like this is the only one. But it almost, I don't know, it's one of those cases where, like, people like to copy crimes for whatever weird, sick pleasure they get out of it. So I almost wonder if this case does both good and bad in a lot of ways, right? Like, it does good because people are more conscious of things like this potentially happening, which, again, that kind of goes into our paranoia conversation we had a couple weeks ago. But I almost wonder if, because it's so remembered, people still try to copy it to this day. And it almost makes it worse.
Yeah. I do think this case is different, though, than like what we think about Halloween candy being tainted. Because this was directly like father to children. But he, it's worth noting, you know, he did give those pixie sticks to other kids as well. Not just his kids. Yeah. So.
That's true. I mean, it makes, I hate to say it makes sense because it doesn't make sense, but I can see what the logic was there to try to make it appear like if other kids died, maybe there wouldn't be such a suspicion, you know, because like, yeah, his kids died. They just so happen to have life insurance policies on them, but these other kids died as well and they don't have anything. Like, why would he benefit from them? I think it just kind of backfired in a very, very good way. Thank God that nobody else was hurt by this.
This case really, I don't know, it gives me the chills. I really don't like the cases about families being involved, especially children. So this one was really disturbing. But I thought, like you said, the first thing that came to mind for you when thinking about paranoid on Halloween or, you know, being scared about something on Halloween is candy being tainted. So I thought this one was worth mentioning.
Yeah. Well, and one other thing too, I feel like, and maybe I'm making this up, but I feel like as a kid, I remember seeing like on the news, like around Halloween time, that like news stations would always encourage parents to check their kids' Halloween candy. Mm-hmm. So it's not even like just remembered as a story and a sad one at that, but rather something that would be, you know, literally on the news saying, hey, parents, heads up, it's Halloween, like check your kids' candy. You never know.
Definitely. Yeah, I remember growing up, that was a super common thing. Like, it wasn't just my parents checking my candy. Like, my friends' parents were doing the same thing. Like, it was just something that everyone did. So I'm not sure if it's still done. I'm sure it is. But yeah, I'm not sure if this was the root cause of that, but it's definitely interesting. So moving on to our next story, we're going to be talking about the unsolved murder of Derek Grain, which took place the night before Halloween. So Derek was a mild-mannered man from a small town in England. He's described as a loner, but was also cheerful and very kind. So the night before Halloween in 1980, Derek had been drinking at a nightclub that was about a 10-minute walk from the hotel where he was staying. He had reportedly been spending a lot of cash that evening, which might have drawn some unwanted attention. So around 2 a.m., Derek left the nightclub alone. Rather than heading towards his hotel, he went the opposite direction. It's never been determined why he went the wrong way, but some people think he might have just gotten lost since he was new to the area and was quite possibly drunk. But there's still others that don't really believe that. Apparently, there was a super steep hill on the way to his hotel, and he had just walked to the club earlier in the evening. So if he was drunk, that hill would have still been recognizable or made an impression on him, enough so that he would have recognized that he hadn't gone the correct way or he hadn't hit that crazy hill yet. And again, was probably going in the wrong direction. In that same train of thought, though, people on Reddit were commenting saying that it wouldn't have been that abnormal for someone to purposely head in the way he was going after a night out. The direction he was going was apparently on the way to a popular picnic spot that people hung out at after drinking. So anyway, the next morning on Halloween Day, 24-year-old Sally Isaac was on her way to work when she found Derek Ling face down and dead in a pool of his own blood. His jacket had been torn off, bank cards were scattered everywhere, and police estimate that about 60 pounds in cash had been taken. The murder weapon, oddly enough, was a heavily bloodstained, sand-filled traffic cone, which was found 80 yards from his body. Given this was such a violent attack, police believed the attacker would have heavily bloodstained clothing. But even though the surrounding areas were full of people at bars and partying that evening, no witnesses report seeing anyone with bloodstained clothes. An anonymous caller called in and contacted the police stating that he had seen a mysterious red Jaguar in the area and three or four men attacking someone at around 3 a.m. However, it's still unknown whether this was related to Derek's death or not, as fights were pretty common in that area. Furthermore, the red Jaguar was traced, but the owner was nowhere near the area at the time. It is worth mentioning, though, interestingly enough, that the Jaguar was registered to Derek's hometown, which again was a super small town and was about 150 miles away. But that said, again, the car's owner was cleared. So do you think that this is just a coincidence that the car is registered to Derek's hometown? Or do you think that this is connected in some way? I don't really know what to think.
Being such a small town, I feel like it'd be hard to be coincidence. Maybe there was somebody who had like beef with him that, you know, nobody else knew about or very few people knew about, or people knew about and were scared to say anything later on, and that's why it's unsolved. Or maybe it is coincidence. I don't know. I really do think it could go either way because, I mean, we live in a small world. Like, it is kind of weird the people you'll run into where you least expect to run into them, and it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, I don't know. I really do think it could go either way.
Right. I feel the same way because, like I said, he was apparently flashing cash at the bar, like buying a bunch of drinks with cash, and that could have drawn unwanted attention. And also, there was cash taken from his body. So this could be a robbery gone wrong and just been random. But at the same time, you know, we always talk about like emotional murders or like these particularly brutal murders having some connection with it being a personal attack. Mm-hmm. And it being a traffic cone, like, I don't know, if it were a random murder for money, why would they use a traffic cone? Like, I don't know. I could see it going either way.
Maybe it's both. Like, maybe it was somebody who knew him and maybe they didn't have beef, but they didn't necessarily like each other. And the fact that he was like flashing a lot of money and showing off, maybe that just like drove that person over the edge. Especially, mm-hmm. who knows, that person could also know him on a different level or like obviously knows where he comes from. So maybe he took it almost as like an insult. I don't know. I mean, a lot of things could happen. It could be, but I could really, I mean, realistically speaking, I could see it go either way or be some sort of weird combination of the two of them.
Yep, I agree. And again, like we always say with these unsolved mysteries, we don't know what we don't know. And if we had more information, that could totally change the case for us and could lead to a conviction. So if anyone has any information, we will leave links on our website. So please get in touch with the proper authorities. So thank you everyone for listening and for joining us today for this special Halloween themed episode. You can find all photos and sources for this case on our website, thrilogypodcast.com.
As you guys for sure know by now, every week we release two hints leading up to our next episode. And so even though Krista is not here with us this week, it is her case next week. So we will be essentially going over that case, Morgan and I, for her. And the hint for her case is, I don't know if you could hear that. That's me trying to pretend I'm in a courtroom. The hint is order in the court. So be sure to tune in next week for the next episode of Thrilogy.
Thanks again for listening. And as always, you can keep up with all things Thrilogy on social media at Thrilogy Pod and make story requests on thrilogypodcast.com.